Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 113 of DM Discussions, a podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhofer. How you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing pretty good. I am stoked. I'm ready. I have actually readied an action to talk about stuff. So, you know, once we get there, we'll see what happens. No movement involved, so we're good. And I don't have anything for a bonus action. I need to level up more.
Well, I know we talked about this right beforehand. We're both post recovery of watching The Acolyte, and boy, did that show make me want to play a monk.
Yeah, like, me too, actually.
Super cool. And this is like no spoilers or anything, but the first two episodes dropped. There hasn't actually even been like lightsaber fights yet, but they've really been focusing more on like the martial stuff of Jedi. And my God, like, how cool would it be to do like some psionic monk subclass or something like that, mm-hmm. where you could kind of, I don't know, kind of mimic like a Jedi type thing. I think that'd be pretty cool.
I bet you it's out there somewhere.
I'm sure it is. Cause I mean, Star Wars 5e is out there. So yeah, I would hope that they have some sort of like martial, like hand to hand Jedi type class, or using the force, interweaving the force in with like, you know, punches and kicks and blocks and stuff like that.
You know what? Just
regardless,
for fun, D&D Beyond's homebrew subclasses, doing a search, and there are a lot of Jedi. So
there you go.
Hey, maybe you'll find something cool.
There you go. And just I just had to mention it because it was a very fun first two episodes. I really enjoyed it, and that just made me think as I was it like the wheels started turning in my head. Man, that would be a really cool like monk subclass. Some like psionic monk subclass thing, because they've been adding more psionics. They'll mm-hmm. actually be adding two new psionic subclasses for the new player's handbook. Even so,
I'm pretty happy with that.
Just a thought. Maybe I'll mess with it at some point.
Oh wow! On this one, you get a lightsaber at level 3.
Wow,
that seems a little a little OP there, but you know it's cool. Whatever.
Skipping the Padawan and the Knight stage. Straight to Jedi Master.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, whatever. It's cool.
But yeah, we've got Star Wars aside. But there is a Star Wars 5e conversion out there. We might even have the link to it in the show notes. I know we've talked about it a few times. Heck, Dimension 20 actually ran their Starstruck Odyssey based off of the system.
Oh.
The 5e Star Wars system. So that's super cool because it's got a lot more like built-in stuff for ship combat, for like ranged weapons, that sort of thing. So anyways, I digress. We've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about today, starting with a little bit of news. The first being that we talked about the new Player's Handbook and the new Dungeon Master's Guide. The cover for the new Monster Manual has been revealed as of this week. Has a very scary beholder and lots of different monsters on the front of it, and a ton of some of like the biggest monsters on the back. You'll actually be able to pre-order apparently all three of the new core rule books on D&D Beyond starting June 18th.
Oh, good.
So that is coming up very quickly in the next week or two.
That's very good. That's right after I get paid too. So perfect.
But yeah, it's super, super great art. Honestly, all the new art, the covers for the new books have been really good, mm-hmm. in my opinion. So though you haven't seen the alternate cover, I know some people really like collecting the alt covers. We saw the alt cover for the Player's Handbook,
which is
already
gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Like I don't do it just because I didn't start doing it. and I feel like at this point, I don't need that ADHD OCDing in my life.
You know, let's put it this way. These are technically kind of new additions. So if you're gonna start, now's the
time.
That's true.
It would be a good way to differentiate. But yeah, there's the art is really great. And so hopefully I'm hoping we start seeing a little bit more, like some previews. Mm-hmm. I want to see what some of these new stat blocks look like. And because they said they've changed every single monster in the monster manual.
Yeah, I really want to do a compare and contrast in here and take some of the simplest monsters as well as some of the most complex ones and really see kind of which way they're going, as well as diving into, you know, more of those new higher level ones, as well as just, you know, anything that's, newish to the book. See what happens with that stuff.
Yeah, because I mean, we've got 10 years of monster experience, monster building at this point. So I'm hopefully expecting something a little more like what we've seen from Flea Mortals, what we've seen from some of the latest Kobold Press books, what we've seen from some of the like the latest third party stuff, or even they've been doing a lot better with the last few adventure books that have come out. So I'm hoping we start seeing a lot more, because to be honest, and this is one of the reasons we have the Monster Fixer segment, I rarely will run something from the OG Monster Manual just as it is anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely starting to get into that same level of thought there, especially with my characters. I didn't mention it, but last session we leveled up to 14. So they need to have something extra going on there, as opposed to, well, I'm just going to hit you.
Well, yeah, it's not only, it's one of those things. You want it to be fun to fight against, but you also want it to be fun for you to run.
Yeah, exactly.
Like bite claw is not fun to run.
I mean, unless you literally have, you know, a bite and a claw attack, but that's really more of like, you know, MMA kind of stuff. You don't really want to, you know, physically go against your players with monster abilities. I don't recommend it.
No.
So I don't know where that was from. Sorry.
But the, like I said, the pre-order is going up on D&D Beyond June 18th. So be watching for that. If you want to pre-order some of the new books, and hopefully one that around that date will get some more like preview type things, either, you know, like the Todd Kendrick videos dropping more information, or, you know, some preview pages, stuff like that would be really nice. So hopefully we'll see more of those things.
That'd be great.
Second, Giant Bomb dropped just a few days ago, at least for when this recording will actually come out. So Roll 20 is acquiring Demiplane.
Yeah.
Which is a really big deal, because Roll 20 is one of the largest virtual tabletops in the industry, beyond like Alchemy, Fantasy Grounds, Foundry. This is a pretty big deal, because in a lot of ways, Demiplane shores up most of the weaknesses of Roll 20.
Mm-hmm.
Because Roll 20's like character sheet and stuff sucks. It does.
That's what I've heard. I have no experience with it whatsoever. Pretty much because of that, really.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. Honestly, they've been trying to beef this up recently. A lot of their platform is based off of a very legacy base. And so a lot of it looks, it does not look modern, doesn't have modern UI, that sort of thing. Whereas Demiplane is very modern UI, very well-designed website. And they basically have been doing for other games what the D&D Beyond did for 5th edition, is they're providing these very well-made character sheets that allow you to fill these things out. They have ones for Vampire the Masquerade. They have ones for Pathfinder. They have ones for Daggerheart. And they're actually running the beta off of the Daggerheart beta off of Demiplane. That's like the official tool set. They were working on like Avatar stuff. They were working on a 5e character sheet as well. That was supposed to be, or apparently still is, coming soon. So the fact that Roll20 is picking them up, I mean, it feels like if I was in charge of Roll20, that would make a lot of sense. I don't know how they are going to do integration. They even talked in the FAQ already about, if I bought it in one spot, is there a way to, you know, unlock it in the other one? Because obviously the two aren't combined in any sort of way yet. Mm-hmm. And they said they're looking into that right now. But Demiplane definitely was starting to become kind of the go-to for digital RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
As far as compendiums, character sheets, that sort of thing. One really interesting piece of this is that Adam Bradford, who we actually had on the show a little while ago, which was super great talking to him, because he basically started D&D Beyond, or he was one of the founders of D&D Beyond. He left to help form Demiplane when D&D Beyond was acquired by Wizards of the Coast. He is apparently not going with this acquisition. Interestingly, he has moved on to Smiteworks, which owns Fantasy Grounds.
Well, he really is just kind of jumping around to have his hand in everything.
He's Infinity Stoning, virtual tabletop environments.
Next thing you know, he's just going to snap and suddenly all TTRPGs are just gone.
Oh my gosh. Only half of them.
Yeah, true.
But so it is very interesting that he did not go with that acquisition, because Demiplane is not that old. It's only like 2-3 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like
that. It's not that old, because it basically got founded shortly after D&D Beyond got acquired by Wizards, and that didn't happen but what, like 2 years ago,
if that,
or something. Yeah. So very, very interesting. Very interesting. Because Demiplane was definitely disrupting the space. No question.
Mm-hmm.
And Roll20 is one of the big players. So I have cautious optimism for this. Demiplane has a really good thing going. I played Vampire the Masquerade using the character sheet, and it is so nice. D&D Beyond honestly spoiled me for tabletop RPGs.
Yes.
It really did.
Yes, it most really definitely. In fact, if there's not some sort of character sheet involved with Demiplane, I don't know that I would have, you know, as such an easy time to really get in and try anything new. I mean, not that I have, but having that online tool is a huge reason why, when I'm like, hey, I want to play something, let's do like a one shot. Let me just grab people. I'll walk them through making a character with D&D Beyond. And it's super simple. The fact that Demiplane has that for multiple game systems is one of the best things that they have going for it. And then combining that with Roll20, it's just turning into D&D Beyond, but not as specialized in one game system. And it's a huge thing in competition, which is only good for us too, because from what I read in the article, Demiplane is still going to have a version of the fifth edition character sheets. So, well,
and Roll20 has a license from Wizards to have like all the, you know, sell all the content and mm-hmm. stuff that I don't know if Demiplane actually did. So it could legitimately become, in theory, now that it is under them, a real competitor to D&D Beyond.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. If they can offer a fifth edition character sheet that has more than just the, you know, SRD content, the free, you know, Creative Commons content, which is what I think Demiplane was offering. They were basically just doing that and then third party mm-hmm. stuff on top of it. So again, I think competition is good.
Very much so.
I think D&D Beyond has been a little lax in the development of features department. The homebrew system could use a lot more love. The character sheet could really use some love. The obviously they're developing their maps, which is good. Mm-hmm. The encounter builder and encounter maker have been in like stages of alpha and beta for a very long time. We still don't have the monster creator that Adam Bradford originally talked about, which a lot would allow people to work through a wizard and basically build new monsters with Wizards of the Coast's backend math, which I think would be super cool. Obviously deeper integration of the character sheet spells, whatever, into the maps, and into the encounters and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So it feels like there's a lot of work that can be done on the D&D Beyond side. And so I'm hoping this will just be good competition and offer people more choices, and especially people who are in that Roll20 ecosystem, you might be getting some big upgrades in the mm-hmm. next year.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great too.
Yeah. I overall, it's a really great thing to happen to everybody, as far as I can tell. You know, it's an upgrade here, it's an upgrade there, here an upgrade. I'm not going to go through with that.
Everywhere enough.
But, you know, it really does come down to competition. If you have someone who's doing something just as good, you have to strive for better. If they're doing better than you, you have to strive even harder. So, you know, as someone who is very much into D&D Beyond, because I use that for maps, I use that for my encounters, I use that for character sheets. If Demiplane and Roll20 turn out to be way better, guess where I'm going to start looking, and guess where my subscription might end up going, you know, things like that. You really yeah. have to keep those things in mind and go for the superior product.
Yeah. And not only that, Adam Bradford seems to be very much a driving force behind a lot of these upgrades, this like user friendliness push, the accessibility type stuff. So I'm very interested to see what Fantasy Grounds ends up doing now that he is has a large amount of creative control over that, because I've not used Fantasy Grounds. Apparently it's very popular for use with a lot of systems. Apparently the engine itself is incredibly powerful, but the front end is very 90s. So I look forward to seeing if, you know, that can be modernized while keeping much of its power and flexibility. And we could see 3 or 4 very legitimate players in this tabletop RPG digital space that offers, you know, maps and character sheets and compendiums and all, mm-hmm. all that sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Overall, I think it's going to be great. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. So keep an eye on that. We'll obviously be watching that space, as well as seeing what, if anything, D&D Beyond does in response. Hopefully Wizards will just continue putting extra investment and development into that platform, especially if they're planning on this new core addition to be the thing for the next 10 plus years. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
All right. So with the news out of the way, we have been talking a little bit about what we wanted to do. And we decided to start what will probably be a reoccurring segment every once in a while,
yeah.
Called Combat Encounters. And instead of just talking about building encounters overall, we're going to start diving into like specific scenarios to try and help you as you're designing a specific combat encounter, be it like, this is a combat encounter that takes place in a big field. This is a combat encounter that takes place in a dungeon. This is a combat encounter that takes place on a cliff, in a volcano, you know, like, all in the air, all sorts of different things. So tonight we're going to start with combat encounters on the sea.
It's kind of relevant for me too. So I'm really glad we're talking about this.
Yes. And it's probably why we're talking about this, as Ben, has a sea combat encounter coming up, I believe this weekend.
Well, I mean, if they roll campaign. It, of course, it's always a possibility. So,
yeah. So let's start talking a little bit about how to build a fun, interesting combat encounter on the sea. So this would be basically whatever vessel, whatever thing they're on has left the dock. You're kind of in open sea.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have my players this and I'm on this or in this area and I'm trying to design a combat encounter, my first thought would be, are they going to be actively moving during the combat encounter, or are they going to be still? Is it going to be like the boat is anchored, or like another ship is, you know, docked up next to them and they're fighting or whatnot? Or is there going to be a chase? Is there going to be something where the ship is still moving while the monster is being fought or another ship is being fought?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once you kind of have that figured out, that's where you can really start looking at, you know, which way you want to go with it. Because, you know, you can have like a pursuing ship or even one that's like, say, you know, just on the side, but they're both kind of going the same way. But then at that point, you kind of need to count for, okay, well, I want to turn. And then based on, you know, initiative turn order, however you figure out, you know, where, like what ranking ship stuff happens on, you know, you can make that turn or whatever to see if they come after you. Maybe that instead of turning, you're going to fire a cannonball, or maybe you're going to drop anchor to swing hard left or something. I mean, there's a bunch of different things you can do versus if you're just kind of, you know, docked next to each other, say, you know, there's a diplomatic envoy that you're docking with and something goes awry. At that point, it's like, okay, well, we're stationary. What are our options? What can we do here? And like somebody with that, you can try to get the boat moving as opposed to just staying where it is. If you're already moving, you can try and get it to stop. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios in just, hey, ships on the sea that you go with, and then you just completely build off of from there. So for this, Ryan, do you want to have us moving? Do you want to have them being pursued? Like, what are your thoughts? How should we go about building this one?
Let's have them moving, because a lot of times on the sea, you know, even you're not going to be sitting still very often when you're in the middle of the sea. So first you have to come up, how mechanically am I going to do this? The easiest way to do this, and there are boats inside like Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master Guide, that actually give how fast they go, right? I think moving fights, whether it be on a boat or on some sort of vehicle or something like that, are very interesting because it allows you to change up the environment as you go. Maybe every two rounds something happens, or you know that this ship goes 80 feet around, right? And so if there's another ship that is catching up, or you're trying to catch up to it, you know your stuff. This allows your players to know what kind of movement they can use if they get off the ship or they're flying or something like that. But it also allows you to change the terrain, quote unquote terrain. It's water, but oh, maybe there's rocks around, right? Maybe you're in an area with lots of shipwrecks that you're going through. Maybe there is a whirlpool or some other sort of hazard that is going on. Maybe you're in another element, weather, right? Maybe you're in a storm. Maybe waves are generated every two rounds and come and smash into the ship, and players have to do something, be it get to a railing and hold on, make dex checks, cool stuff like that. That as this encounter is going, you can make it more dynamic, make people have to or want to move around. Because in a lot of D&D combat scenarios, especially if you're new or haven't been running stuff long, it's very easy to fall into the habit of developing things where everybody runs up and all the melee people just stay in one spot. Just whack, 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 whack. Just hit each other back and forth until mm-hmm. they're dead. Then move on to the next one and do that. Rather than moving or giving good reasons to move around, whether it's hazards or whether things are getting out of range or people are moving to block line of sight, that sort of thing. So I'm a huge fan and proponent of dynamic movement. So having some form of thing to get your people moving on the ship is something to think about as you're going into designing your encounter.
Yeah. So before we get too deep into this too, I do want to say that the Ghosts of Saltmarsh Appendix A has a ton of stuff on ships. So that'll help out with like stats, types of ships, things like that, in case you're looking for something like that. We're not specifically going over that sort of stuff. That's kind of the boring stuff. You don't want us to read stats to you. I mean, who does? But going back to the actual combat and or the encounter of, you know, running and moving and everything like that. So Ryan, I think, you know, Nevermore and I, we play Sea of Thieves a whole lot.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely love that game. And when you start doing some sort of ship combat with us, you're constantly moving. You're constantly doing something because there's always something that you need to check, something that you need to do or change your position on, whether it's, you know, I'm at the helm actually steering and everything. Oh, there's rocks. Even though we're finding a ship, don't want to run into those. Got to steer away from it. You have to make sure that your cannon angle is right so that you can actually hit correctly. You have to make sure that, you know, your sails are at the right height so that the speed that you have works with your cannon angle and stuff. If you take damage, someone's got to bail water. Someone's got to, you know, try to repair the ship. Much less, there's people who have to actually shoot the cannons, load them, do things like that. So having that kind of, you know, frantic movement and things going on is going to happen. And it gives your players opportunities to, you know, take certain jobs. Like, I'm going to be the cannoneer. I'm going to be shooting this round. Or you can say like, oh, the helmsman has, you know, taken an arrow to the chest. Someone's got to jump on the helm, you know, do that, move around. You know, we're working the sails. We're working this. We've got boarders who are swinging over and you have to take care of them. Meanwhile, you still have the ship who's firing cannonballs at you. Or depending on what sort of weaponry is, you know, trebuchets or catapults or whatever is going on. So you have a lot of opportunity to have just a bunch of stuff happening while you're still moving, making those decisions of where do I want to go? Do I want to get out of their cannon line? Do I want to make sure that, you know, we, again, drop the anchor, do a hard right, pull the Pirates of the Caribbean on them. You know, there's a lot of different options just for the players to do, much less what the ship's going to do. So everybody kind of has to be a little bit on the same page of what the important bits are.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that's kind of one of the fun things about doing a combat encounter on the ocean. There's a lot of different ways, a lot of different scenarios that can come up. You can even have multi-stage fights where it starts out where you give the players, hey, your ship has X amount of ballistas, mm-hmm. right? And then this other ship comes and you're trying to fire back and forth. You're trying to hit key targets. Maybe you can say each ship is made of, you know, three parts. You can try and hit these certain parts to do damage. And that may then, after, you know, three rounds or something, that may affect how the boarding action turns out, or if there's more survivors or less survivors on the other ship or your side if things are damaged. If you're fighting a sea monster who might be large and have the ability to move around the ship more, you could always give multiple things on the ship to do, like have those ballistas in the front or the sides and the back. So if you have a turn where a martial character can't make it to where the sea monster is this turn, they can run to a ballista, turn it around and fire it at them, right? Fire at their weak spot. Or one of the coolest things, Krakens. Yeah. Krakens are
everywhere around you. Yeah.
Krakens are incredibly cool creatures because then you have these tentacles that you're also fighting in addition to the main body of the beast. So you can do a lot of really cool stuff with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing that I love that you pointed out is that you have, you know, martial characters kind of doing their thing. On top of that, look at it this way. If you have any sort of caster, you are in a prime spot to do potentially a ton of damage to the other ship just by being a caster. Generally ships, they're made of wood. Wood catches on fire. Fire bolts in the right spot, you can burn sails. Even more so, throw a fireball and you've got an entire deck on fire that could potentially weaken it too, that you have to worry about. Also, there are, you know, specific like domains for clerics that are great for, you know, sailing and stuff, where you have like gust of wind prepared, where you can kind of, you know, boost the sails, a whole bunch of different things that you can do to, you know, affect the outcome just by using the talents and abilities that you already have before you even stepped on board the ship. And that's something that's also really fun too. And again, talk about a martial character, you're fighting a sea monster or whatever like that. Oh, they're a great person to kind of pick up, because guess what? They can fight a tentacle while they're in it. You know, have fun with that. Swing around and everything. Have them board another ship to, you know, try to take out some of the pirates or privateers or whatever you want to fight. Maybe they fight their way up to the captain and force a parlay of some sort, or, you know, there's just so much as a character that you can do with your current set of skills. That doesn't mean you need to take on a job on the ship, but you can do that too. Again, the entire ship is there for you to just kind of play around with, mess around with, have fun with, and really help control the outcome. The cool thing is that there are a lot of like kind of win-loss scenarios that you can look at too. I mean, obviously the biggest loss scenario is, oh, this ship sunk. We're all like floating here, hoping and praying that we don't get eaten by, you know, sharks or something like that. They could also, you know, like destroy the sails or something like that. Like you have no source of locomotion or whatever. They could steal your cargo. Maybe they could kidnap some of the crew members. You know, there's a lot of what can happen. You can also win by, again, parlaying with the captain or whoever's attacking you. You can destroy their ship. Maybe you incapacitate them of some form. You know, maybe you bribe them. There's so many different variables on how it can play out and how it can end that, again, you have a lot to work with on this.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too, when you're doing something like this, you need to make sure you have your things prepared for, hey, my player fell overboard.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do? Right. Because when you are making an encounter, basically, I mean, anywhere really, this could apply to any of the encounter stuff that we're talking about. You have to make sure that, depending on where you are, your situations are accounted for. So like if you're fighting on cliffs, what happens if someone falls off? Right. If you're fighting in the ocean, mechanically, what do you have if someone falls off into the water, especially if the ship is moving at like 80 feet per round or something like that? Because obviously most characters cannot catch up to that. So make sure that as you plan your encounter, you plan your surroundings as well and prepare for the environmental, I guess I would say environmental traps, environmental
obstacles.
Obstacles. That's a great word. Thank you. Environmental obstacles that could arise just because of the location you're at. One of the other things I really like from what Ben was talking about, and again, this applies to a lot of different fights that you can do, especially if they're bigger fights or you want them to be more significant. I absolutely love making tiered fights.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's super cool. And if you wanted to go even further, you could have them have those win-loss scenarios. So, and it's really fun because you can then give your players objectives. You don't necessarily have to tell them how to fulfill them. You just give them the objective. Like, you need to get on the enemy ship. How you do that is up to you, but that's objective number one. Once you get onto enemy ship, you need to get to the captain. How you do that is up to you, but that's your objective, right? And so the players have to figure out, how do we get our ship to the enemy ship, or how do we, wherever we are, get onto the enemy ship? How do we fight our way through or sneak aboard to get to the captain on that side? Or how do we destroy the ship and then get off safely? And then depending on how that goes, you have a really cool multi-layered, multi-tiered encounter that may be all fighting, but also may not be. You may end up dipping out of combat for certain parts and then back into combat mm-hmm. for certain parts.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the idea of, infiltrating a ship or sneaking around or doing something, because one of those, win-loss scenarios is the captain of your ship could always surrender. You could be taken prisoner. Maybe they're going to tow your boat or sail it along with them. Maybe the opposing captain has the idea of being an admiral, so he wants another ship. He doesn't want to destroy it. He wants to just take everything, take it over. And at that point, it's like, okay, we've done the combat. Now we're in your captured scenario. And then you can move from there. You escape. Then you try to break out. Then you try to flee. Again, you can't exactly jump off the ship and swim away to flee. You have to take it back over. You have to, mutiny. Maybe you're going to align yourself with the new captain because you didn't like the ones you're with. Maybe you're just passengers or something. There's a lot of just normal D&D scenarios that can play out just in this one setting because of how versatile it can be.
Yep. And I know I mentioned a little bit about environmental hazards as well. And this is, again, something you can throw into any encounter to make it more dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're all about dynamic encounters here, whether, it's a storm that's brewing or a volcano that's erupting and spewing ash and smoke everywhere, or a whirlpool, or, having to navigate through islands or rocks or shipwrecks or things like that. Anything that adds more to the thought process beyond, I need to hit X things for X amount of hit points so they die.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. To make it far more interesting. And one of the things I wanted to shout out a little bit that can be helpful for these types of things is the Dungeon Master's Guild. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're looking for encounters of any kind, Dungeon Master's Guild, there are usually a myriad of supplements. One really good one, very highly rated supplement for sea encounters and ship encounters specifically, is called Captains and Cannons. And this is an adamantite bestseller on the DM's Guild. It's basically a guide to ship combat in 5th edition. Includes easy to learn rules on how to run ship combat encounters, 13 sample ships to use and adapt to your own campaign, 6 sample combat encounters, 4 sample environmental challenges, complex weather patterns, modeled after, Xanathar's, which introduced those environmental type effects. list of ship equipments and upgrades to customize your vessel. And this is something that's really great, especially if you are having a more seafaring based campaign, let alone, you know, just I'm going to take a ride on a ship for a week or two. If your players actually have a ship and or you're on the sea for any larger length of time, having a supplement like this can be very good, because it's the old adage of why reinvent the wheel, mm-hmm. right? If someone has built a full system for something that you're wanting to use, at the very least, start there and then tweak to your desired, but you don't have to do everything from scratch all the time, because a lot of people have made a lot of really good stuff to help out with whatever environments or whatever types of challenges or encounters you're wanting to design.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, in all honesty, I am buying that right now. It looks like a really good supplement and I can use it. Yeah. I mean,
it's great. Like, because a lot of times, unless you're on a small boat, your characters will probably not be the only ones on that boat.
Mm-hmm.
There will likely be a captain. There will likely be crew. There will likely be all these extra things you have to think about. Like, if X amount of crew are lost, maybe the ship can't move anymore or can't move as fast. The speed gets halved because working the sails becomes much harder. That sort of thing. There's a lot of things to think about. So having something that can help you generate that sort of thing without having to think about and do it all yourself can be very handy.
Yeah. And, you know, as I said in our last episode too, I kind of, you know, biffed the combat encounter that I had because I put too many crewmen there. And with this, yes, I can give them different jobs and everything, but that doesn't mean that my players won't have something to do too, because it is such a large ship. There's things that have to happen. Now, with those, you know, the zombie sharks and the zombies and stuff, we were stationary, so there wasn't as much to do. But in some sort of, like, you know, naval encounter or fleeing something else, or, you know, big monster or something like that, yeah, there's going to be a lot going on. And I've learned my lesson. Have all the crew members kind of go at the same time, have them, you know, have their set things. But I mean, everything about them that I had was, you know, they're essentially CR, like quarter or half, you know, they're not the heroes of the ship. They're only the ones who work there. So you want to make sure that while you will have other people on the boat, make sure that one, they can get in danger. Maybe they can get hurt. Maybe your healer will have, you know, a plethora of targets to kind of look at and watch after. But on top of that too, give some of those really important jobs to your players, or at least invite them to do it. But if it's something that they don't want to do, or they think that, you know, or, you know, they choose to do something that they feel their character would do better or differently or something like that, you still have someone to, you know, man the wheel if you need to, someone to, you know, tie ropes randomly. I don't know, whatever you want to do on the ship. There's someone there to do it if they need to, or, you know, depending on how super realistic you want to go with this or not, you don't need to worry about, you know, which way the wind is blowing. You know, just work it that way. Your ship's going great. You're maybe on a current that's at the you know, the top layer of the ocean or something like that. You don't need to worry. The sails aren't even down because we're riding this current or something like that. You know, whatever. You're the DM. You're able to kind of, you know, decide how far into it you really want to go, how realistic you want to make it, or based on your group, how or what would be fun for them. So really, there's a lot that you can choose from, a lot that you can do, a lot that you can set up, and it is entirely your choice to see how it works, fix it completely on the fly. Maybe on top of that, you know, you don't like it that someone has to worry about the sails. Have the other cap or the other pirate ship blow up one of the masts. You don't have to worry about the sails at that point. You know, there's plenty of stuff that you can do with this. And, you know, I'm very excited for this upcoming weekend when we're playing, because I mean, who knows what sort of encounters they're going to get into. I definitely don't want to say now, because I don't know what they're going to get. I know what I'm going to kind of prepare for, but you know, I'm one of those people who lets them roll and see what happens. So who knows?
So specifically, have you ever run a naval combat encounter?
Not at all, which is one of the reasons why I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, just based on the stuff that we've talked about, I know of the possibility that there is. So it's an exciting prospect for me.
Oh, for sure. I actually, I've run airship ones before, which we will talk about at some point because those are really freaking fun.
Oh, I bet.
My one big, like naval sea combat encounter was the opening scenario of my third campaign. Oh, I think I talked about it a little bit, where the Dragon Turtle attacked the ship. And there wasn't a whole lot they could necessarily do about it, but there was a lot that they could do on the ship. There was a lot of people they were trying to save. So it ended up being that the Dragon Turtle was almost the secondary thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what was happening to the ship itself became the actual encounter. And that's something that you can potentially do too, is you could potentially put up something in your sea combat encounter that is not necessarily meant to be defeated. Like if you have lower level characters and they're sailing and like a Kraken attacks or a Dragon Turtle or, you know, some huge sea monster encounter, the encounter may end up being, how do we survive as characters? Mm-hmm. How do we try and keep the ship together? How do we do all these? How do we get away? Which also can make for very interesting encounters that still let characters use their abilities, even if they're not directly fighting, which is super cool too.
Exactly. And that goes back to, you have so many different options for what your success, you know, things are, or your failure objectives, you know, everything like that. Because if it is, let's get as many people off this boat as we possibly can. If everybody is, you know, killed by a Kraken except for your party, you didn't do that great. Sure, you succeeded, but the scenario that we're looking for was, let's get everybody off the boat, you know. And on top of that too, this could be your driving force towards, you know, going into the next step of your campaign, or it could be really the breadcrumb quest that gets you to the mysterious island that is off on the corner, or the one that you see that's just within range of the longboats, or anything like that. Or I'm not a big fan of this, or everybody could be swallowed by the Kraken. And then you have one of those, you know, fantastic adventures through the stomach and all that stuff, trying to make your way out, which I really never want to run one of those. I'm not a fan of those, but maybe it works for you. Who knows? You know, there's always something more that you can, you know, have this kind of lead into, so that just, you know, a pirate encounter can be just that, an encounter. It could be a doorway. It could be, you know, your introduction to the whole campaign like you had. I mean, there's a lot that you can do with it.
I'm very excited to hear how yours goes. And if, as a listener, if you have a really cool encounter, that you've done with ships or on the sea, let us know. Let us hear about it. We'd love to hear those stories to see how you worked them, because it is very different than the old static, we're in a field or we're in a forest type combat encounter, or just encounter in general.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So let us know.
All right. Well, let us know if you enjoyed the new segment. Hopefully we will do more of these type of segments in the future. But before we actually talk a little bit more about kind of what's going on in our own games, Ben, I know we had a few like community things that we wanted to highlight beyond just the captains and cannons and Star Wars 5e.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about her before. Jeannie D, she has a YouTube channel that is just absolutely fantastic. She talks a lot of different aspects of DMing, as well as character creation and playing and role playing. you know, hopefully one day we'll be able to get her on. That'd be awesome. But in the meantime, definitely go check out her channel. Now, her most recent video actually dropped today, and it is something that is really like it. The title of it is essentially, you know, how do I get my players to do combat? But it really is kind of also an overarching concept of making sure you have the right balance in your game, because, you know, there are plenty of characters out there, you know, especially martial characters, who a lot of their scores, a lot of their points and everything are kind of more combat focused. And if you're four or five sessions deep of just role playing and they're not really able to do much or get in there or anything because they're kind of focusing on fighting, you need to make sure that they're having a good time too. So Ginny talks a lot about, she has three main ways of actually getting people to, or, you know, your players to, you know, engage in combat. And I'm not going to spoil the whole thing because, I mean, we want you to watch the video. It's absolutely fantastic with what she does, but she has really good reasonings on why you would want to do it, as well as, honestly, you know, the best reasons for doing it. And again, once you're there, check out a lot of her other videos. They're pretty awesome. Like the one beforehand, gosh, what was it? It was pretty good too.
There's a really good one she did recently on role playing across gender.
That's what it is.
There was also another one, the Dungeon Master strategy rewired my brain. It was about having players have collaborative, like, mm-hmm. short-term, mid-term, long-term goals.
That was good.
Then you could tie fully into your campaign, which was also very good. Mm-hmm. There's been some bangers lately.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, check it out. We'll have a link to her channel as well as the just the specific video of getting your players to, you know, actually do combat. So yeah, check her out. Great stuff.
Yes, highly recommended. Okay. Well, Ben, I think that's it for the main portion of the show. But as always, before we go, we like to talk a little bit about what we're doing in our games. So did you get to play since the last time we talked, or is it all just prep and planning?
Prep and planning for this Saturday. So I am looking forward to it. Like I said, last session, they leveled up to 14. I'm excited. We're working on our way to get to 20, and they've got a pretty good side quest turned main quest adventure in front of them. So we're having fun with it.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see how you use some of your or some of the things we talked about for your encounters.
Oh yeah,
as your party is sailing.
It's gonna be good. I mean, like I said, I've got a crew of like 11 or 13 or something like that on the ship, and they've all got jobs. So we'll see how that plays into it and what's going to happen with them. Last session, I already had a whole encounter list of like, I think 8 different things that can happen. And the first one they rolled were those zombies and the zombie sharks. So we'll see what happens next.
Awesome. Very, very cool. For myself, yes. I had a session. And it was basically, it was kind of a preparatory session, but in a lot of ways it was like big figuring out what they wanted to do. Lots of lore dump, which was super fun. The party ended up, choosing to go to the old city, which is kind of the deep, the old, capital city that was destroyed in the war hundreds of years ago, deep underground, because that's where they found out all these refugees and people are being kidnapped or disappearing to. They don't know why, but there's stuff going on with demons and devils. One of the things they found out is the devil activity had upticked. We got a little brief history on the Blood War, which, for those that don't know, is kind of like the ancient ongoing war between the Abyss and the Nine Hells, where they constantly fight back and forth and kill each other and respawn and to try and gain footholds. And so every once in a while, one side will do something shifty and shady to try and gain the upper hand. And they, one of the organizations in the city believes that is going on right now with the demons. And so devil activity has spiked to try and counteract that. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff here. They got to meet or were able to interact with a character that some of them have met in a previous campaign, which is cool. One of the heads of the Silver Eye, where one of my characters, their son was in it and gave him this coin that he found out was a really big favor, essentially, for this organization. And they were able to use that to get into one of the very few current entrances into the old city. So it was a very, very good RP session. There's a lot of, like I said, a lot of lore that was dropped. And we ended the session with the big, basically, vault door being opened and them stepping into the cavern that led down to the old city. They got a map. That was one, a super smart thing that they had asked for as part of the deal. Awesome. With their favor. So they kind of know where to go now instead of wandering around, which is a really big deal. So we're going to be playing again later this week, which I'm very excited about, because schedules and stuff, it just worked out that we can play again. So I've got some fun stuff prepared for the old city, and it's starting to, like, it's kind of like the beginning of the climax for the first arc type thing. So I'm excited to see what happens and where it goes.
That's really cool. I'm looking forward to that. I mean, you know, creepy old underground cavernous cities are always a very fun place. You never know what's going to happen there. Plus, you know, the Abyss versus the Nine Hells in the Blood War, that is a cool thing to bring in. So super excited to hear about what's going on. And I bet your players are having a blast just discovering, oh, all this is happening beneath the city that we've lived in our entire lives.
Yeah. It's super cool. And it allows me to do kind of, you know, a quote unquote dungeon crawl without it actually being a dungeon.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot of potential fun in there. So look forward to talking about that one next time.
All right.
But as always with that, that will bring our show to a close. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We always have such a fun time just chilling, hanging out, talking about D&D. And if anyone can actually get something from it, then that is just bonus for us. And if you have any suggestions for topics, anything you'd like to hear us talk about, please send those in to our email or throw them in our Discord channel, which, Ben, why don't you tell everybody where we can be reached so they can do that sort of thing?
You bet. If you're looking to email us, send those to dndiscussions@gmail.com. It's right in the show title. It's just that plus @gmail.com. Very easy to figure out. If you're looking to join our Discord, though, that's something where it's just the tiniest little bit harder. Basically, all you need to do is go to dndiscussions.com, check out our most recent episode. We'll have a link to the Discord channel. We've got more and more people joining every day or every other day or so. Whatever. Doesn't matter. They're coming. We're having fun and having some good discussions there. On top of that, if you do go to dndiscussions.com, guess what? Every single episode that we have ever done is available there. So if this is the first episode that you've ever listened to and you thought, gosh, these guys are kind of cool, I want to hear more about what they have to say. Well, guess what? There is 112 other episodes that have us and sometimes a guest in them. So you can always check those out. If you're looking for something a little more short-term, though, we are on Blue Sky Social. You can find the show. It is at DN Discussions. If you're looking for Ryan, he is at TBK Zord. And if you're looking for me, I am at Ben Bumhoff. Now, last but not least, if you are in the mood to listen to a live play or an actual play podcast, check out Plus 5 to Hit. It's one that I'm on. Ryan was for a bit. Unfortunately, schedules change. Not able to do it right now. Hopefully, he'll come back at some point because we are getting pretty close to the end of the Rime of the Frostmane. We're actually stepping into the final chapter, I think, now. So lots of stuff's going on.
Exciting.
It's pretty great. Pretty great. So definitely check that out. +5 to hit. This show, D&D Discussions, though, we love you. We love your support. Everything that you've done, it's great. If you want to help us out, the easiest thing you can do is tell a friend. If you want to help us out even more so, go ahead and leave a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. It'll help us out. Maybe other people will be able to find the show. And you know what? The more the merrier. We love this whole genre. We love the games. We always want to bring them to more people. So that being said, Ryan, it is always a pleasure talking to you. I am looking forward to telling you about how horribly great my ship combats or encounters are going to go. And with that, everybody, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.